All right, people, we're live for another Sunday. It's another installment in the Talking TV podcast summer series 2024 with following up last summer, which was one of the best movie summers possible ever. We have this summer, which has proven to be fascinating, to say in the least. We're here to review Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. No overlay today, at least for now. I'm joined once again by the one, the only Jeremy Nunez, who is on with me for the top 10 best movies of 2023. Jeremy, happy to have you back.
Dominic, hello. Happy to be back. Didn't I say I was never coming back?
You did. You did, exactly. You beat me to the punch, too. That's exactly what I was going to ask you about. I'm like, after claiming that he said he was never coming back to the podcast.
And I'm still sticking to it. I am coming back. This doesn't count.
Until the next time. Got it. Oh, man. Well, as you can see, Jeremy's already got his profile picture set. So we're going to roll this intro and then we're going to talk about one of the strangest newest, but possibly best blockbusters of the year with Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Stay tuned. All right, Jeremy, we're here to talk about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which for me, I mean, in a Hollywood sense, it makes perfect sense why this movie is a thing. But just for me personally, you know, with my own attachment and I guess you could say my idea of keeping that previous trilogy that came out in the 2010 so precious to me, I was against the idea of this movie, to say the least. So before we get this started, I wanted to know what your thoughts were when this movie was first announced and how that compares to just your general thoughts on the franchise.
When this movie was first announced, I was kind of like, oh, I thought we were done. And I didn't realize, when did they first announce it? What, 2-3 years ago?
I think it was more recent, because I don't remember hearing about this until like last year, like 2022, I think.
And maybe it was like, let's say 2 years then.
Yeah.
2 years, that's what, 5 years since the last one came out?
Yeah.
And it wasn't going to be a reboot. It was, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Toy Story 4.
Yeah.
It was like, I thought we were done. We're having another one of these. I didn't see Toy Story 4, so I can't compare it. But that was my initial thought. And they were saying it was in the future and doesn't concern Caesar. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right. So this is still like, it's still, you know, going somewhere. But how far can we go? What are the ties? Is it still tied to the original movie in some sort of way? I wasn't let down by any of the other ones. So I was very much like, I'll see what happens. I was open to it, but I was also kind of wary.
Yeah. So many questions just for me personally coming out of it, because I mean, my history with the franchise is so sparing, and yet the previous three movies have had such a major impact on me and my movie watching and my movie taste in general, particularly Rise of the Planet of the Apes. That's such a strange blockbuster that works so much better, I feel like, than people even realize at the time or since, honestly.
And yeah.
How much of like that franchise is owed to. Like, I was literally just watching a video breaking down how intrinsically specific that movie is with establishing the origin of that franchise and how it kind of borrows and shifts and loops in the way that it is structured so similarly to other movies, and yet how it strings them together in terms of telling the narrative and in terms of how it generates and how it's a franchise that works on empathy. I think that's kind of like the cornerstone to this entire franchise is empathy. Ultimately, you know, it's part of the big twist of the original, which is where this kind of all results from, in it, not us being conquered, but it's our own hubris. You know, we create this virus that wipes us out and simultaneously gives rise to a technically biologically subservient yet very similar species to us that then overtakes us, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a part of the I'm a big fan of this franchise. I saw the originals when I was younger. My mother even took me to see the Marky Mark 2001 Planet of the Apes. The Tim Burton one. So I've seen all of them, and all of them except for the Mark Wahlberg one, it tries. There's one scene where it tries, but all of them have this moral quandary. All of them are morality plays, which makes sense because the first movie was co-written by Rod Serling of The Twilight Zone.
Yes.
And so it's Rod Serling starts it, and then there's another guy who doesn't get credit for the rest of the original movies called Paul Dean, this like English writer, this old guy who kept the ball rolling and making these movies about empathy and morals and mirroring it to our society. And so what I love about the recent three, the Andy Serkis, you know, Rupert Wyatt slash Matt Reeves
yeah.
trilogy, is that they are movies about the world. And so they take their time and they develop all these characters because they have to be reflections of us. We have to see ourselves with the apes, or else there's going to be nothing there, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, just from a narrative sense as well, kind of how you follow the track from like Rise to Dawn to War specifically, and like how the layering of storytelling is done throughout it. It really exemplifies like the perfect trilogy, because even though there's like a significant time gap, there's like a 10-year gap between Rise and Dawn. And then there's what, like another, like, but then there's a very,
like, seven, like how, like what, 4 or 5 year gap between War? Because he has a kid, right?
The
kid,
yeah. He's got older. The older one, yeah, but the younger one has gotten a little bit bigger, you know, but yeah. it hasn't been that long. Like, I don't know. I don't remember how much time they said, how much fighting it actually happened. But yeah, and then we fast forward from Rise to Dawn, right? And kind of how Rise does this spectacular, like, character building and origin for a character that, again, I will reiterate, is a CG character. Non-human character, and it generates more empathy. It almost kind of solves the problems of like humans in the CG creature thing, where most of the time the CG creatures are playing, you know, second tier to the humans, you know, giant monster fighting ones. But here it's like, no, they actually solved it, because the way that they are able to make the apes ultimately the main character of those movies as primarily CGI computer generated characters, it's incredible to say the least. And Then we kind of skip over, and now we're here at this movie. And what's so fascinating about this movie is that, with the exception of one character really in this movie, the humans are essentially gone from this, you know?
Yeah.
They've essentially solved what it is that they've been trying, I feel like, to do, which is to have in a movie that does not involve human actors really at all. And if they are, they are playing completely second tier. Because other than Freya Allen and William H. Macy, who pops up later on in this movie, kind of out of nowhere. Thoughts on that later. if you saw that one coming. But you also have pretty much just like every character in this movie Kingdom that we're about to talk about is computer generated. And so the level and so the fact that they are still able to effectively that Hollywood has effectively gotten to the point now where it can tell a story of this magnitude and of this scale with entirely computer generated characters, steps into the future, to say the least. Whether it's the right direction or the wrong direction, who knows? You know, you could say that this is also a kind of where they were always headed, with all the massive amounts of visual effects being used in big budget movies for the last 15, 20 years now.
Yeah, and how detailed the world is. You said something, because we follow each other on Letterboxd. You said something in Letterboxd that I was like, oh, that's it. I had the same feeling when I watched Avatar.
The Way of Water.
Way of Water, where I was like, oh, this is in the world the whole time.
We are
in this world the whole time. The difference, though, is that Avatar, Way of Water, James Cameron feels the need to put everything in layman's terms for you.
Yeah.
Dialogue is very basic and all that, because it's the George Lucas model of thinking. It's like, you're going to be in a weird world, so we got to give you cliches so you can feel comfortable.
Right.
Whereas this movie did it way more subtly, way more quiet.
Yeah.
It felt so much smaller. It didn't feel world. It didn't feel like world ending.
Yeah.
And I thought that for a early summer, like, blockbuster movie was kind of crazy, but it also keeps in line with Planet of the Apes. If you watch any of those movies, that's how they feel like. They're not action-packed like crazy, you know? There's scenes, there's sequences, but then you leave with this kind of just feeling of...
Right. They're a lot more think-PC than you would think for some things that are touted as, like, you know, blockbusters, you know? I mean, obviously, the original Planet of the Apes is, like, a staple of, like, old Hollywood, you know?
Yeah,
and Hollywood history and movie history in general.
It's in that in-between between old and Hollywood. It's, like, right there on the
Exactly. Cut. Especially as well, like, I attribute so much about visual effects storytelling to that previous trilogy, but, like, that also kind of has its origins in the original, obviously, which was groundbreaking in terms of, you know, makeup and costume.
Yeah.
Visual effects. So... it all kind of ties together.
And franchises too, because
yeah, one of the longest running. Yep,
first modern, like before Star Wars, they
James Bond was running around the same time.
But James Bond didn't have consistency. It was just James Bond. There weren't I'm talking about modern franchising where it was like toys and comic books and spinoffs. Like Apes did it, and then Star Wars did it afterwards, and that's when it blows up.
Right.
And so this movie feeling like. An Apes movie should always end, I think, like this should be a part of the Bible. Whenever you make an Apes movie, it should never have a finite ending. It should always have an ending where you walk out being like, damn, what?
Right.
All those movies should never have finality. It should always just feel like, oh, no, or.
So that's the case that at the risk of jumping the gun, but that is an interesting point that you bring up. What do you think of this movie's ending?
So I don't even know because. So, all right. I was talking to I went to see this with a high school friend of mine, and they were like, the thing they loved about Rise, and I also like about Rise, is that you can watch Rise by itself and not worry about any of the other movies. You can watch Rise.
I said the exact same thing. I literally said the exact same thing.
You
the other
can watch
day.
Rise, like, and then you can even jump to the Heston one.
Yes.
You can watch that one. Just watch, and that'll be it.
Could not agree more. Dawn and War ultimately add to the overall experience of the story of Caesar, but as far as just a perfect one-off origin, Rise is as good as it gets,
as
honestly.
As good as it gets. You can just watch that and then go on to the Charlton Heston one.
Yes.
And then honestly be done. You don't have to watch any more. You can just be like, okay, that's it.
Yep.
And so this movie's ending is both... To me, it feels like a great, I don't know how to describe it, but it feels like it has that feeling of Rise as well. I can be done with this. I was like, oh, I can watch this one, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And then also, I wonder where it'll go now. You know, obviously, that's what the movie's telling you, but it's also just like, how does this tie in to... I'm lying. Let me rephrase that. It feels like I could watch this and be done because it does feel like its own story. And that's what I liked about it. It feels like a fable.
Yes.
It feels
I couldn't agree more.
A fable in the book of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes, I agree. I could not agree more, especially since that, like, I like that we're still able to kind of explore the journey towards the first one without, like, being able to deviate too harshly from what the subject matter is. Because you gotta think, right? Any other franchise pretty much at this point would have been so concerned with like course correcting and redirecting and shifting genre and tone and getting away from the substance of what the original franchise was.
Without
and
being cute either.
Exactly, exactly. And this is like one of the first ones that actually is able to like keep consistency in terms of like overall quality, sticking to the subject matter of what the original was about, which is continuing this morality tale and this constant never-ending conflict between humans and apes, and how like constantly the morality of one that kind of one of the species that is ultimately really not had by the other species, and kind of even in this one with the Freya Allen character, with the Maeve character that comes in, there's still that level of conflict where at the end when Noah is talking with her.
And she has gun
back. He's just got the gun, and he's like, every time you speak, I trust you less. It's like, and you can't blame the apes. That's always been like the cornerstone. And this goes all the way back to Rise as well, is that like the reason why the apes ultimately triumph has nothing to do with their own dominance over humans.
No.
You know, intelligence or physically. It is the fact that humans' hubris ultimately and selfishness will always be the key to our destruction and the key to this endless conflict. But... So let's talk about actually what happens in this movie. We talked a lot about kind of like what happens around it and the context leading into
it. Themes and all that. Yeah.
Right. First things first, before we jump into the actual substance, what did you think of the opening scene and kind of like the brief like flashback to the ending of like Caesar's funeral from the end of War? You know, because War ends pretty like hard cut. Like, no, Caesar's done.
He's dead.
That's it.
He's dead. And someone had a parallel. I saw this on Twitter. In the original series, the first five Planet of the Apes, the last movie, Battle for the Planet of the Apes, ends with a world where humans and apes coexist. And the camera zooms into a statue of Caesar. And the statue sheds a tear.
Really?
And at the end of War, like someone on Twitter was like, the last thing Caesar sees is his son, who he's about to orphan, befriending a human who he orphaned.
Oh.
And it's this thing where like Caesar's like, I don't think we will ever get down to being together at all. Like, this will, it just will never happen.
Yeah.
And so the movie beginning with his funeral, and it's with people who know him, cut to right. What, how long is it, 200 years?
300 years.
300 years later.
300 years later.
He's a myth. He is Moses. He is a story that people just hear about and don't know about. I think that beginning flashback was really cool because it's putting us, the audience, into perspective of like, oh, this is the Caesar that we know, and that no one in the future of the movie will ever have any balance. This is the only time we'll see him, because if you cut this scene out, he is mentioned by name. We will never see Caesar again throughout this whole movie. He is a body.
That's true. But that's what's so interesting too, because at first I was a little confused, because I'm like, this ultimately has nothing to do with characters that are going to be in the movie. Why do we need to see this? And then as the movie goes on, and as you understand like how he has transcended from mere mortal into myth and legend, kind of, in this entire new generation and really this entirely new world, because you see like the movie does this very interesting job with the scenery, with the setting as well, where it constantly has you questioning where they are. Because of the landmarks that are used and the mass amount of vegetation that has grown on it as a result of, you know, kind of the wild retake, moths, exactly. You know, man has ultimately kind of regressed to like a prime, like an original form, you know, de-evolution.
The virus, right?
Because of the virus, exactly. Well, also because of how it evolved and escalated in the end of war, to where it was literally reducing them. It robbed the one of their ability to speak, you know?
Yeah.
So, what's it called? So we open, right? So when we cut to the future, right, we have this new tribe of apes, you know, kind of this one secular tribe that doesn't really interact with the outside world, you know, with our lead character, Noah, portrayed by Owen Teague. And it's kind of fascinating where it's kind of pulling almost like an Across the Spider-Verse in a way, where it's setting up the overhanging story of the myth of Caesar, but while also like kind of reintroducing you to this whole new world. It's something that I really like that a lot of movies promise to do, but they usually don't. And the fact that this one actually did and kind of went out of its way in homework, I actually really am impressed with the director here, Wes Ball, who it's funny because I did not watch any of the Maze Runner movies because of that was just during the dystopic future teen phase that I was like,
so many
Hunger Games, Twilight, Divergent, Maze Runner, like there were so many of them. There was a new one, it felt like every week, and I didn't watch any of the Maze Runner movies, but I heard that Wes Ball, like director wise is actually able to do some impressive things with those movies, and so that's why I was very curious to see how he was going to handle this. And the first thing I appreciated was how this wasn't trying to emulate the Matt Reeves movies. This movie did very much have its own style, and I also appreciated how epic in scope it felt. It really did feel like, I like that how you mentioned that this is a fable, because to me this is literally Campbell's journey. Like I was literally seeing the 12 steps play out in front of me.
Yeah.
And it was kind of uncanny as well how like we finally had like an epic backdrop and feeling to go along with that, you know, like when Noah's riding his horse throughout those abandoned cities, and you know, when he's interacting with and meeting with all the different characters kind of along the way until he reaches the end. It had a very Conan the Barbarian feeling as well. I don't know if you got that too.
No, it did. It had this or Clash of the Titans. There's like this 80s fantasy feel to this movie.
Yes.
Which is interesting again for Planet of the Apes, because they were never Campbell stories. They were more fish out of water.
Right.
Stories for most of them. Like they were mostly that. It's mostly fish out of water and then revolution stories.
Right.
This one being like, I think Mike, our previous guest and possible guest, who knows?
Possible.
Mike said that he was like, oh, it's just a new hope. It's a new hope again with apes. I was like, yeah.
To a certain extent.
But I just the world building, the pace of it. I did feel it was a little overlong. I felt like these last two apes.
You know what's funny that you mentioned that? To a certain extent, I felt that the length more with War than I did with this one. This one, the length felt just right there. Maybe like a couple sections that could definitely been trimmed down, but everything kind of felt important and necessary for the story that was being.
Yeah, started. I wasn't upset that it was. I was like, oh, this is like a Terrence Malick apes movie. like a lot of meditating on things like these, like, but that's the point. We have to watch these characters think. We have to see them process that, because the motion capture is incredible.
It's so good. It's and so good.
This is one of the few of these movies where I noticed the face matching the ape.
Yes.
But it didn't take me out.
Like, the amount of close-ups they did. Like, yeah, I think this is more close. There were more CG character close-ups than I've ever seen in any movie of this nature before. Like, and just the physicality of it. I mean, come on, as us two who've like been studying physical theater, you know, the physicality that's involved with those performances, it really is impressive, man. What they're able to pull off. Owens and now League, also,
and who's the other? Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant is Proxima. But for me, the big one was Peter Macon as Rocka. That was the fucking stealer, if you ask me.
Great, he
so
was
good. I didn't think you could top Maurice, who personally for me is the best character of all the apes in the original trilogy.
Shit,
they came close.
They came really close, and he's like a very good character. I even love this movie had Easter eggs that didn't piss me off. Like, it was Easter eggs that made sense. Having the gorillas pull up in the proto gorilla outfit from the original.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of Tim Burton in there.
A little bit. I did notice that. Like, the shape of the gorillas, I'm like, oh, these are evolved gorillas. They're slimmer.
Yeah.
They're more humanoid. Their heads are a little bit longer.
Their helmets have like that weird Tim Burton cone helmet.
I did notice that. I'm like, oh, that almost looks like a Michael Clark. And ironically, you know, speaking of the fact that Michael Clark Duncan was the prime gorilla in the last one.
Yeah.
Did you do some searching and see who played that chief gorilla? What was it? Silva or something like that?
No, the one that kills Noah's father?
That's Eka Darville, a.k.a. Malcolm from Jessica Jones.
The crackhead?
Yes. Yes. He is fully evolved.
Crazy.
Right?
He was great.
He was really good. In a way, a better bad guy than Proximus was. Like, Proximus, for as being built up as he was in the trailer, did not have as much screen time as I thought he would. He's kind of like the Emperor Palpatine. He kind of just shows up at the last bit in order to provide.
I love that his showdown. I know we're hopping around all over this movie, but like, even his showdown with Noah at the end isn't like a big fight.
No, it isn't. But like, how they utilize his character is like more of a manipulator rather than like a physical presence. He is physical for sure, but like that whole discussion with the dinner at the end with him, with them, with Freya Allen and with William H. Macy.
Yeah, man.
That's like, really good. I'm like, this is actually really, really well written.
Yes, like really well written, really well acted from the apes' perspective. Like, again, those people playing the apes, like,
yeah,
they are in a different school for that shit.
Yeah.
Like, and I know some of it is the CGI people helping out, but just like, even there's moments where like, I think the beginning where it's Noah and his two buddies. I forget.
Yeah. Suna and Anaya or something.
But like in the background of that, there's like a shot of the three of them just standing there. And Noah says something, and they're all like, nah. And he gives himself kind of like a pouty, like, yeah, that was stupid.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about that that's so...
Yeah, I really like the dynamic with his friends. That was a really, really good dynamic that they built up very well. And kind of like how, yeah, they said that like he cared about Suna, but like they didn't like need to emphasize like that romantically, so happy that they didn't need to do that. I'm like, just all of the setup at the beginning was just so perfect as far as actually like following the character through like their everyday like life and routine. It's something that you just never see in movies anymore. And so I'm so happy whenever they actually are able to put that in something. Like,
yeah.
I'm very, very appreciative of that. Kind of, again, it was basically what I told Mike yesterday. And at first yesterday, I was like, kind of like, I was like, I'm not sure if this did this as well, but I realized I wasn't being fair in the comparison, because in terms of like, this was another setup movie like Rise was, you know? And I realized that Rise also did take its time too. It's just that I think that because that movie just was shorter, and with what it was able to accomplish with such a short screen time versus this one clearly had more of the length, it was clearly much more of like a different kind of a story and telling the story for like a different kind of an era of apes movie. In hindsight, I don't mind that, especially with like how this movie is able to take up a majority of its time, you know, and obviously with how this movie ends as well, it's setting it up for a different approach where instead of having like maybe like an overhanging threat, it's once again going to be like, it'll be like a different threat every time with the constant overhanging existential threat.
It feels like it's building the lore to the original movies without having it be front and center, which I love, which I think is very smart. It's kind of what prequels should always do. It should never be like, this thing from the original. Remember this thing? Remember that? Yeah. It's like, no. That thing should be the smallest part of this story. The story should be about the characters in this world and how it builds up to that. Like, so Proxima Caesar wants to open up the door where all the weapons are stored and everything is in there. And the human Freya Allen character wants to blow it up so they don't get their hands on it. Right.
Right.
And they go in there and they find a doll, human doll that talks.
Yeah.
It says, Mama. And that doll is in the original movie.
Really?
Yeah, that doll's in the. There's a scene where Charlton Heston kidnaps Dr. Zaius. My photo on my avatar kidnaps Dr. Zaius because Cornelius, one of the scientist apes, did an excavation at a site and was like, "I found a lot of human artifacts." And Dr. Zaius is like, "That's against our religion. Don't talk about it." So they bring Charlton Heston there and they're trying to prove to him that humans were here first and like they spoke and blah blah blah, and. He's like, why would you have a doll? Like, why would you have that? And Dr. Zaius is like, our ape children want to play with dolls. It doesn't matter. And then they squeeze the doll and it talks. And Heston's like, why would you make a human doll that speaks? And Zaius is like, all right, damn, you caught me. Like, all right, fine. Yeah, sure. Yeah. They were here first.
Yeah.
So, but in this movie, it isn't a big deal because we as an audience already know that humans are there. So the movie treats that the same way as we do. It doesn't treat us like idiots.
Right.
It doesn't pull the Jango Fett has a son named Boba Fett.
Like, even though we still like and rewatch Attack of the Clones.
Of course. But still, it's just like, all right. Yeah. Like,
but Attack of the Clones is the worst one of the prequels.
Yes. Easily. Yes. And it's just, or like, you know, Count Dooku being like, I'm building the Death Star. You know, when he like pulls up the hologram. It's like, all right, dude, I know it's going to happen. Like, you don't need to do that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't just shove that in our
face. Jeremy, it's poetry. It rhymes. Oh man.
Yeah, no, a solid prequel. I think this movie was really good.
Yeah.
It's a slow burn, but
it works. It's refreshing. Like I said, the journey that it kind of takes you on, kind of the layers that the moral gray, if you will, because kind of Noah is kind of reluctantly paired with the Freya Allen character Maeve, you know, given, you know, how certain. That's the other thing too. There's a lot of bodies that hit the ground this movie too. There's a lot of ape deaths in this. Some you will not see coming. And there was one in particular that really actually had me being like, no, when that happened. Like I was actually really
in the river.
In the river, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man. I was not expecting that.
I physically cringed. I was like, no. Oh yeah, my God.
That was actually really sad. Really sad.
Yeah, man.
Cause like also the other thing too is he was the last holder of like the true knowledge of Caesar, you know, that now Noah ultimately has to carry on through his tribe.
Yeah. And I love the religious parables of it.
Yes.
Like just Caesar's a myth. Caesar to them is like God. And Noah's just like, listen, like, we don't got to do all this stuff. Like the doctrine doesn't have to be followed this rigidly. Like we got to figure this out.
Exactly.
And, like it's again, it feels like Twilight Zone stuff where it's the moral parable. This you can absolutely put this onto any sort of ties to religious warfare throughout all of history, you know.
Yeah.
And the movie kind of talks about that too with the William H. Macy character being like historian librarian man explaining to Proxima Caesar, you know, empirical history and like that's crazy.
Yeah.
It's so insane, but it makes sense that in order to build, you have to, rely on the past, and whoever's past is doesn't necessarily have to be yours.
But even what more interesting than, again, relying on the past is, you know, manipulating the past for your own gain and benefit, which is clearly what Proxima Caesar's done. Now, we don't know, obviously, if this was Proximus himself or if he was part of a lineage before that was already kind of doing that. But obviously the similarities, you know, to obviously the previous apes have come about, and Proximus is obviously compared the most to Koba because of the manipulative nature. But even still, I would say that there's a difference there because Proximus is – because where Koba hated humans and his hatred of humans led him to commit the deeds that he did in Dawn, Proximus is almost an admirer of humans. He almost is fascinated by what they've accomplished and kind of wants to be like them. The way that he talks about them, you know, with that evolution speech, which was just so awesome. Like Kevin Durant – props – shout out to Kevin Durant. Who's another actor like Dan Stevens who's having like a major comeback this year between Abigail and now this movie.
And
like, you know, for an actor that I feel like a majority of us were introduced to is playing the Blob and in X-Men Origins. It's kind of insane, honestly, that he's able to give this good of a motion capture and a vocal performance. Like, I didn't even realize it was him until like I had to read the cast. I'm like, okay, no, that's that Kevin Durant, you know, that shares the same name as
the basketball player.
It's the same name as whatever I say, Bill Nye, you know, the actor who plays Davy Jones. It's like, no, not Bill Nye, the science guy.
Yeah.
Even though my dad makes the joke every time, even though he knows who Bill Nye is. But yeah, so that I thought was really interesting. And as far as like even how he's able to like manipulate Noah and be like, you know, and kind of like get him to want to go inside the vault and see what's going on. And then they open the gate. That was the only moment where I was like, wait, what's going on here? Where it's like, you have to assume that it's during the day. So, you know, that like they're going to be waiting outside.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
the gate opens, you know?
Yeah. And I like that most of the movie took place during the day, too.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. Comparatively to like dawn, which is always like mostly, you know, nighttime.
Yeah, but dawn is so good, honestly.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the thing. They shot every movie at nighttime. It would make the CG look less obvious.
But they got,
remember, Rise is mostly during the day. And as much as I love Rise, man, that CG is not aging well.
Yeah, it's not. I started watching it the other night.
It started to look a little dated.
It looked a little PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
That's a bad comparison because PlayStation 2 is always what you said when you talked about PlayStation 3. So I guess now we have to say PlayStation 3. Yeah,
that's crazy. That's absolutely crazy.
Right. But yeah, the Rise sort of looks like a PlayStation 3 game sometimes, but it's one of those things where the effects get better as the movie keeps going. You're right. Like, oh, okay, it's like they learned how to use it.
And like, I love like the setup of Proximus's kingdom when they get there, like that little like shelved off alcove, like right against the shore with that remains of the bridge hanging.
Yeah,
overhead.
Man.
What bridge is that supposed to be, dude?
I think that's Golden Gate, because
is that the Golden Gate?
They're still West Coast, but I think that's supposed to be the beach that Heston finds the Statue of Liberty.
Really?
I think so, because if that's the same, if they find that doll and that's supposed to be the excavation site, Heston keeps going north.
Okay.
And that's where he finds the Statue of Liberty.
So the Statue of Liberty wound up on the West Coast?
Yeah, I don't know how.
That'd be crazy if they showed us how that happened.
Yeah, because that's what I was thinking when I was watching that. I was like, all right, if this is supposed to be the beach where the Forbidden Zone is or whatever,
yeah.
I was like, how the fuck does the Statue of Liberty wash up all the way to that side?
Right.
Or do they drag it over there? Like,
no, it's like it broke off during like a landfill or something and floated in the ocean somehow, even though it probably wouldn't. It would probably sink.
Yeah, because the original Apes movies, they don't specify where they are. They don't say where it just, the Statue of Liberty's there and they're like, oh God. But this time, because we know the Franco movie started in Golden Gate.
Right.
And
in San Fran.
And it stays there.
Right.
Like, I'm assuming that's
right.
Because
they don't specify where they travel to when they say they go to the Oasis, when they leave their home in the forest in war and travel to the new Oasis. They don't say where that is.
And that's technically Malibu.
Right. Right. So, like, did they travel north? Did they travel east? Like, where did they settle? You know, like, they didn't say where that was.
I'd love to see a Planet of the Apes movie that's, like, in the Midwest or something.
Exactly. That like, a bunch of, like, you know, Midwestern apes.
Yeah, with, like, hillbillies. Like,
that would actually be really funny.
Like, how far does it go? You know?
Yeah. There's unlimited possibility. Did they say they have a plan for, like, up to 9 movies or
something
like
that? 9
movies.
Yeah, they announced that, like, yesterday. They're like, yeah, we're doing 9. So, there's going to be, what, 6, 5 more of these, I guess?
Yeah. Which is the next franchise. I mean, listen, if they're of like this consistent level of quality, I'm never going to say like no to them, you know?
Absolutely. I'm fine with it. I just like this idea of these movies being morality tales for different apes.
Yeah.
And like just building the world.
So like we don't even spend like the rest of the couple movies with Noah. We just like cut ahead to like different apes. I'm with that, honestly.
I like that a lot more.
Yeah, I'm with that, honestly.
You get different attitudes towards whatever it is. And again, it's like Twilight Zone where everyone is different.
And at the end, you could have the Ape Avengers where they all come together.
Yeah. And we fight a giant Charlton Heston.
A giant CG deepfake Charlton Heston.
Yeah, Charlton Heston.
Oh my God, we gotta stop. We're giving Disney too many ideas.
They'll get it. They better credit us. I don't care.
Yeah, they won't. But no, the AI is gonna steal our voice, and then when Disney is asking ChatGPT for ideas for future Apes movies, it'll give us in our voices,
exactly.
And we'll get credit for it.
There was another Twitter thing someone said. It was like, if this does lead up to the Charlton Heston movie, who should do it? And someone was like, Joel Kinnaman. I'm like, you know what? That's not bad.
Actually, that's a pretty good idea.
It's not a bad idea.
Really good idea.
And he's the guy that comes comes down and is like, "Oh my god!"
shout out to the he could do it.
I forget who said it. I wish I could credit him, but I was damn, just, it's a brilliant.
Whoever came up with that idea for casting, good shit.
Yeah,
but I kind of don't want them to remake the Heston movie. I kind of want like that to be like the end shot, like it's the post credit scene of like the last one of these movies that they do, and it's Joel Kinnaman in the ship right as it's about to crash.
Yeah,
right? That's the and then it also ties to For All Man, and then it also ties that it's for somehow it's the same character that he played in For All Mankind.
It would, because isn't For All Mankind, is that the future or is it like an alternate?
No, it's an alternate future basically. Like every season cuts ahead a decade, so like we're already in like 2004 in the fourth season, and he's like 60 or 70 years old, so that already kind of
works. Okay, so he's 60 or 70 in 2004. Man, if it's alternate from All Mankind, that makes sense. It would make sense.
All right, all right, all right.
It makes sense.
That's right, because when does he leave from in the first Planet of the Apes movie? What year is he from?
He leaves from 1973.
Okay.
And then he ends up like 2,000 years in the future.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. He's deep. Like he ends up like in the 3000s or something.
Got it.
He's...
Okay, so even in this current line of Ace, we still have a while to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, they could like keep cutting ahead like every 100 years or something to like show the progressive evolution of the apes. That would actually be kind of cool. Way to continue this in an interesting way that is constantly changing.
It could also be like the book, because the book, it was a French book called Monkey Planet, La Planète des Singes, by the guy who did Bridge Over the River Kwai.
Okay.
And the book is way more like it's almost like a Heart of Darkness, where it's like this like all the humans are like naked and the apes are like wearing suits and like have flying like helicopters, like they're way more advanced. And the guy that gets captured, the Charlton Heston analog, is like at first scared and afterwards just like, I just got used to it. It's way more Twilight Zone-y, where he's like, yeah, I'm living amongst the apes because they found that I can talk.
Wow.
And it's like, they're like racist to him and stuff. And he's like it becomes almost like a domestic drama.
Could you imagine if one of the movies that we got was literally just a domestic drama between apes?
Like, like one human in this ape society. Like, it's more like that. And like, then he meets the like feral humans who are like, you know, outcast,
right?
And they are more ape like. They're like offended by clothes and they're always naked. They're like, take that off. Like it's way more barbaric and like wrong. Apparently, Verhoeven was gonna do one in the 90s. It was gonna be a Verhoeven Apes, and I'm like, it would have been like the book. It would have been way more like horny and like weird and like people having like man ape children. Like if they have that much time between what this is and what the original movie is, you can explore the rise and fall of a civilization so fast.
Yeah, that would actually be kind of cool.
Yeah,
like, this is like, because this movie was like the beginning of ape civilization essentially. You saw it was like the it was basically like, for example, during humans it would be like, when did we start like basically constructing our first thing? Was that Cro-Magnon times?
Yeah.
It was when we first started constructing like, you know, our own shelters and hunting for our food and forming basic nomad tribes essentially. When we, you know, at the beginnings of Dawn of Humanity, that's kind of where we are apes wise. So like we could essentially,
and they're way more advanced. Like yeah, they could be faster with that. Like,
oh yeah, because they have the advantage of, you know, basically I would say like a certain level of like moderate human intelligence, but like without like any of the I'm not a psychologist, so I don't know any of the proper terms for it, but without kind of any of the major like innovative motor skills, but with the benefit of having monkey limbs essentially. So they're still like kind of do it, all kind of balances out essentially is what I'm trying to get at.
And then there's still no hierarchies. Of course, the gorillas are the ones that are like crazy. They're the ones that are gonna be army people.
Yeah.
But like in the original, again, the chimps are like the they're like the thinkers. They're the philosophers and the scientists. And then the orangutans are like the lawyers and like judicial. And the gorillas are the police and the bullies and the brutality. Like that's the hierarchy in the original movies. And so I wonder how that'll get to that point.
Yeah,
because it kind of hints towards that with Noah looking towards the stars,
right,
with the telescope at the end,
right, exactly.
Oh, the chimpanzees will be the ones into science and all
yep.
that.
Yep, like exactly. Oh, exactly. And like the next movie we could be following like Noah's descendant possibly.
Yeah. And maybe how he cares for astronomy and the stars and, you know, exactly. looks for that stuff, how that goes, you know. Oh man, brilliant. And so Is this gonna say like spoilers? Because we've been spoiling since Jump.
we really have. We've been talking about like plot details, but I wouldn't say that we've done like any like crazy. Well, I mean, we've told like what parts of the plot movie, but that's part of the review. Like we talk about the plot in the review.
We assume that you watched.
We assume that you watched it. If you're watching this, you know, yeah. Everybody who watches this knows that my reviews can be pretty spoiler heavy at points.
So the ending. I want to talk about the ending.
Yeah.
Because you see Freya Allen go to like some army base,
right? And there's like an entire like small sect of humans that have like still retained the ability to speak and like can still like communicate. So there are like pockets of humans still spread throughout. So basically, like even though they weren't like the major conflict in this one, I liked how they set up that they are going to continue to possibly be a source of conflict going forward.
Yeah, and so I was when I saw again. So in the original movies. The second Planet of the Apes movie is called Beneath the Planet of the Apes. And that one concerns a Charlton Heston lookalike coming down to the Planet of the Apes and like looking for Charlton Heston, basically. And it does in Evil Dead 2, where the first 30 minutes are just a remake of the first Planet of the Apes with this new guy.
Oh man.
Literally like the first half an hour.
Heston wouldn't come back for the season.
No,
right?
Heston comes back.
He does?
Yes. I'll give you a breakdown for Beneath the Planet of the Apes right now. Heston comes back. The movie starts with the ending of the first one. So he finds Statue of Liberty, and then he keeps riding on the horse with Nova, the girl that can't speak. And then there's all these hallucinations that happen, like the ground earthquake happens and fire comes out of the cracks, and there's like lightning striking, and he's like, what the hell's going on? And so he walks up to a wall and like tries to hit it, and then he disappears. So Charlton Heston's gone for the rest of the movie.
Okay.
Right. There is a guerrilla invasion. They're like, we want to invade the Forbidden Zone. We got to go over there. We got to see what's going on. Fake Charlton Heston meets Cornelius and Zira, the chimpanzees that helped real Charlton Heston. And they're like, go to the Forbidden Zone. That was the last time we saw him. Just go over there. He goes and he winds up underground, and he finds this sect of people, like humans, that can speak, and they wear like it looks like socks on their heads, like they're humans, and they're telepathic. They like control his mind, and like it's the weirdest thing. You're like, what the hell's going on? Then weirder than that, they start doing a church ceremony for an atomic bomb, and they take their faces off. Like, and you find that they've been like radiated, like humans. They take their faces off, and you see like sinews and like veins. It's disgusting, and it's rated G for children. You can show a child this. And so they arrest fake Charlton Heston, and arrested downstairs is real Charlton Heston. And they make the mind fight. They overcome the people. The gorillas find this underground base and start shooting everything up, even the atomic bomb in the middle of the room.
And the bomb goes off.
No, they shoot fake Charlton Heston in the head. Again, you see it. Headshot. Rated G for kids.
Rated G.
Then they shoot Charlton Heston. Heston's like holding his guts. He's like,
oh, wow.
He's like, Dr. Zaius, you son of a bitch. Dr. Zaius is like, I knew humans were evil. I knew you were capable of all this stuff. Charlton Heston presses the button and blows up the planet.
Oh, wow.
That's how that movie ends.
Earth so how are there up. Three more movies after that?
So Cornelius and Zira stole Heston's ship because nothing happened to that ship. It landed. They stole it and they time travel back to 1973.
Oh, wow.
And they're the fish out of water story. So they're the apes in modern society.
Okay.
And it becomes kind of like a fun like kind of adventure of them in LA, and people are like,
so basically Star Trek 4 but as planet
yes
apes.
But with apes, exactly.
Yeah,
and they're like the celebrities and everybody's like, oh, talking apes, and then one guy in the government is like, how the hell do we have talking apes? Like, what's going on?
I saw a clip of that online. It was the trial where they're being interrogated, and they're talking about like their time, where they came from.
Yep. And that is basically the seed for Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, which is remade into Rise.
Okay.
Because they have a kid and they get Zira drunk. They literally drug her and are like, tell us what happens in the future. And she's like, there is an ape that grows up because all of your pets die from like illness. All cats and dogs die, so everybody starts adopting apes. And there was one ape that had enough, and he said the word that we don't say, which is no. And that baby, they give birth to that baby, and that baby becomes Caesar.
So they're Caesar's parents.
Exactly.
And then they retcon that for Rise. Exactly. Wow. Okay.
So going back a little bit to the Beneath the Planet of the Apes, that's where my first thought went when you saw those humans in Kingdom. I was like, oh, are these the radiated people?
Yeah.
Before they become radiated? But then, no, Freya Island hands one of them something. They put a little tape deck in whatever, and they start talking to, you know, ground control Major Tom.
Right. Led, of course, by the gorgeous and often criminally underused Deacon Lockman, who is just, oh, Deacon my God. Lockman. You know, she's in Severance. She was in the last Jurassic World movie for like 5 seconds. Hold on. What else has she been in?
She's in Raya the Last Dragon.
Yeah, Raya and the Last Dragon. She was in Dollhouse. That's what she broke out.
Oh, the TV show.
Yes.
Okay. She looks familiar.
Yep. Yeah, she played Sierra in that. And she's also in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Altered Carbon. She's done a lot of stuff. But yeah, she's Miss Casey. She's the therapist who turns out to be Adam Scott's wife in Severance.
Got it. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, they're calling out. They're like, can anybody hear us? And then you hear a voice from the scramble thing be like, yes, we hear you. And everybody starts cheering like, woo, yeah. And it cuts back to Noah looking with I forget the girl's name, but they're looking through a telescope at the stars credits, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, what is that spaceship? Because I don't think it's going to be Charlton Heston.
No chance.
But I do like the idea. I really like the idea that someone landed first before him.
Oh, yeah. It would totally make sense that it would. Because they show you, I mean, obviously they hint at it, and obviously this possibly wouldn't happen, but they show you the rocket taking off and Rise.
And Rise, yeah.
Right. So
that's supposed to be the Icarus. But again, the Heston ship was never named.
Right.
They got retconned to the Icarus by like fans. So that could also just be a different ship, which who knows. But I just love the idea that someone else would land before Heston.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
All this and
that's
like, pretty cool. Whoa, he has to be with these apes.
Yeah.
He's not probably going to get a trial like Heston would. He wouldn't get civil discourse.
No, he wouldn't.
Like, that's, I like that idea.
Yeah, that's cool. To,
like, I wonder if that's what'll happen.
Except who would play the human that would land?
Yeah, that's the thing. If this is supposed to be still kind of modern, quote unquote,
300 years, so
yeah, give or take, like
right.
I would love it if it was like a schlubby guy, not like a weakling, but like he can't be like all American.
Paul
like,
Walter Hauser, maybe
not even. Who's Bill Pullman's kid in Top Gun?
Lewis Pullman.
Yeah, like somebody
from
like,
Bad Times the El Royale,
like a dork. Like you have to have him be like a dork.
Okay. That's, like only like nerdy smart.
Yeah, like if Matthew Broderick was a like prime Matthew Broderick,
right?
80s.
Not modern, not weird modern day Matthew.
No,
Broderick.
Or maybe that'd be interesting too if it was like an old like classic like you know.
Yeah.
Like fishy,
John, what if it was John Hamm?
He'd be great, like
playing his character from The Morning Show season 3.
Playing his character from Unfrosted, the pop.
Playing his character from 30 Rock.
Yeah, playing Larry David in Curb Your Enthusiasm. But like, yeah, like a dorky, like NASA kind of a guy, like someone that's not Captain Kirk. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, that'd be interesting to see how they would deal with the Planet of the Apes.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm interested to see where this goes after what's called past this movie. Needless to say, I am impressed, especially given kind of how unimpressed I've been by everything Hollywood's put out this year. I mean, we kind of saw this coming because of the strikes last year. We knew that it was going to impact pretty much everything that we got this year.
Yeah.
It's just after 2023 arguably was the best year of the 2020s so far.
Yeah.
And kind of how this year is shaping up to not be that. I mean, I hate to say it, but Dune 2 kind of has wiped everything out off the market. Fall Guy's been awesome, or was awesome, but it's cratering at the box office right now.
Yeah.
And everyone's wringing their hands.
Horror. We had like,
yeah. My hope for Fall Guy was that it was going to continue to circulate via word of mouth, but it doesn't seem to be doing that, at least not yet. You know,
I wonder if Apes will take that spot.
Yeah, well, I have a feeling that it will, because normally it's within those first 2 weekends of May. Like, there's a reason why they opened Deadpool 2 right, like, 2 weeks after Infinity War, you know? Mm. Like, they were just still hoping to catch some of that momentum, and I guess it worked. You know, I still think Deadpool 2 could have benefited from being released later in the year, but that's just me. But But yeah, so I guess your final thoughts to star ratings before I just wanted to talk to you kind of about like what the rest of this year looks like movie wise in the summer.
I'd give it 4. I'm teetering between 4 and 4.5 out of 5 because I didn't stop thinking about it after I watched it. I was just like, wow. And you know what I loved about this movie experiences like this is when I left, I went to the bathroom and there were people talking about it deep, man.
Yeah.
Having conversations with strangers.
Yeah.
Like
that's the power of cinema.
I was so hyped to see like a dude talking to his girl being confused a little bit. And then these guys next to him being like, can I butt in? Let me just, and like the other guy was like, please. And then they just had this conversation. I was just like, that's awesome that everybody's like talking after the movie. That doesn't happen much about the movie, you know, like still trying to like figure things out. So 4 or 4.5. I think I'm gonna stick with 4.
Yeah,
I'll stick with 4.
I would stick with 4 as well. I had some initial complaints at first that I was like, but honestly, upon consideration, yeah, especially given how low caliber the rest of the movies this year has been. Like the next movie that I have after Kingdom, which is my number 4 movie of the year right now, which should tell you everything you need to know about this year as far as movies go, is Asphalt City, that movie with Ty Sheridan and Sean Penn, which I really liked. I really liked that. That was really good. But yeah, so far my top 5 is Dune 2, Fall Guy, Mars Express, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, and Asphalt City.
What's my top 5 so far? Have I even seen 5 movies this year?
Yeah, I'm up to 20 movies so far now.
I don't know if La Chimera counts because it technically came out last year, but it's...
Yeah, that was a weird one. Like, La Chimera, Robot Dreams is like just came out too.
Like, because I loved La Chimera. La Chimera, The First Omen, Dune 2, this... do I have another one? I'm not sure about another one. That's my 4 for so far. Yeah. I don't know if I've seen a lot of movies this year.
So far, the rest of the movies that I've seen so far, Leroy, Texas, which is a Tribeca movie that I saw last year, but it opened a release on digital this year, was fantastic. Immaculate, Monkey Man, Drive Away Dolls, Abigail. Yeah. I saw the TV Glow. That was okay. Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, Challengers, Love Lies Bleeding, Problemista, Little Death, which is a Sundance movie that I saw with David Schwimmer. Really good. Roadhouse, Godzilla and Kong, New Empire, Rebel Moon 2, Civil War, and Argyle.
Oh, Challengers. I'll put Challengers in my top 5 as well. I really like
Challengers was solid. Challengers was really, really solid.
I really liked it. It felt like a 90s movie.
Yes, it did.
Mike and I were talking about it. I was like, who would we cast in a 90s version? And I said, Demi Moore, Keanu Reeves, and Ethan Hawke.
Yeah.
I was like, that's my 90s version. Like, or like, not
the only
90s,
question
like
is, the only
89.
Question is, right. But the only question is for Ethan and Keanu, who plays the Josh O'Connor part, who plays the Mike Face part?
You know, Keanu plays the Mike Face part.
That's what I was thinking too. I think Ethan's got a little bit at that point. Ethan's a little bit too got a little bit, you know, cocky. He's a little bit swaggery.
He's way more swaggery. And
plus the smile, the weird smile that Josh O'Connor has.
It reminds me of Ethan Hawke, and I think like Keanu being the like stiff kind of like upper, like I know what I'm doing.
Also,
like he just makes sense to me.
Also, speaking of Mike Face, and this is just like a micro nitpick that I have, but why the fuck is Mike Face not playing young Frank Sinatra? Sinatra movie.
I don't think that movie's happening.
I hope it doesn't.
It's the same thing as the Jerry Garcia movie that he was supposed to make, or the Ramones movie he was supposed to make. All his music biopics don't go anywhere, so I don't think the Sinatra one. I know because he said he wanted to make that one really bad. So maybe there's a chance.
And I thought he got permission from the estate. So
no, the estate said no. They didn't give him
permission. Oh, really?
It. Okay. Because I know Scorsese's been trying to make Sinatra movies since like the 90s at least.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. And someone, I think it was a Twitter thing or a podcast thing, I forget, but someone was like, the Sinatra movie will literally put together one of Marty's greatest theses, which is the mafia's control of American culture.
Yeah.
And no one's like represents that more than Sinatra.
Honestly,
like somebody was like, that would be the ultimate kind of movie for him, because then you'll learn about the mafia in film, the mafia in music, the mafia in politics, like all in one movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, if he does an Irishman, not like digitally, but like if he does an Irishman type epic for Sinatra, I'd be there day one.
But if he did it with Mike Face and aged him instead of de-aging
Or if you did a fucking Godfather 2 and had, you know, Mike play young Sinatra
and then DiCaprio do a little older one. Yeah, you could do that. You could do that.
Do that. Like, yeah, that's totally fine. That wouldn't
I don't know. That was just a bit of movie news that was just like bugging me. Like when I saw that, because I literally saw that in Challengers, and I'm like, oh my god, why? Like, why?
Yeah.
I couldn't unsee it.
He's skinny as hell, just like Sinatra. Like,
but he bulked up a little bit too for Challengers, which
yeah,
was cool.
Yeah.
Like, he was not the stick that he was in West Side Story.
Yeah,
I was like, he's 30 or yeah, 31.
He's a kid, man. And
no, but like he's Austin Butler's age. Like he's older than I thought he was gonna be. I thought he was like 26 or 27.
Oh no, yeah, he's 30 something. Because he was in Dear Evan Hansen, like
yeah,
when it first happened.
Wow, and yeah, that's crazy.
I'm surprised Spielberg wouldn't tell Scorsese, like, yo, this kid's good,
right? Right? Like, come on. I don't know, but yeah, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Like I said, 4 out of 5 stars for me.
Solid
movie. Which in the year 2024 makes it one of the best movies.
I hope it wins an Oscar. I don't think it will. I think
Dune 2 is winning everything, but unfortunately,
it's gonna eat its lunch. Sadly,
yeah, but we'll see. Yeah, and then Fall Guy will finally win its Best Stunts Award.
Yeah,
how funny would it be if Fall Guy like started the Best Stunts Award that it doesn't win anything?
Yeah, that'd be fucking hilarious.
Yeah, that would be. All right,
the best casting, because apparently that's going to be an award. That
really, that's going to be a thing this year.
Yeah, is it this year and the year after? I don't know,
but whatever it is, it's about goddamn time because best casting is like.
And will the casting director get the award?
I would assume so. I can't imagine it would be. It wouldn't work like best ensemble like at the SAG Awards.
Yeah,
it's not like that, because that's supposed to be a predictor of best picture. So. Yeah. No, it'll be for the casting directors.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be. Well, anyways, that was the next installment in our summer series, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Next week, we're coming back with Imaginary Friends and Back to Black, the Amy Winehouse biopic. Jeremy, I'm actually having another Playhouse alumni on to
Who
talk
is
about
going
that.
To be talking about
Back? Helen.
About Back to Black?
About Back to Black.
Oh, my God.
Yep. Yep, she reached out to me and asked to be on.
That's so funny.
You know what would be crazy is if you hopped on as like a surprise guest.
I'm not watching that movie. I'd be there.
Worth the shot.
If
Worth
you
the talked shot.
About music biopics and how to, like, if you did, like, where you can go wrong and where you can go right, I'd gladly talk about that. But
well,
I'm not
how about this? You just hop on for, like, the last 10 minutes just to be, like, just to roast music biopics in general. And, like, give a good example of, like, good ones versus bad ones.
You know what? Let's see.
Next Sunday around the same time.
Jesus Christ, Back to Black.
Yeah.
That trailer popped up before.
I'm literally only watching it because of how much I love Marissa Abella from Industry because she's so good on that show.
Man, I feel bad for everybody in that movie. Every time I watch a trailer for it, I'm just like, oh, I'm so sorry.
From the director of 50 Shades of Grey and the groomer of Aaron Taylor Johnson.
And you know what's crazy? She made a good music biopic.
Yes.
The John Lennon Nowhere Boy is a good movie.
But it only spawned bad things from it.
Yeah, like really, it really
Except
did.
For Aaron Taylor Johnson, who ironically is like still the best thing in everything he's in.
Yeah,
despite
he really
how minimally
is.
He's in things.
Dude, it's crazy. Like, how do you mess up so bad? Didn't she do another thing? She did 50 Shades. She did something
else.
She
didn't do the
trash.
Sequels, but she did something else that was really bad.
Hold on. Now I got to look it up.
I'm looking it up too.
She did something else that was trash. And you were like, what?
It was. And she doesn't even look that good either, which is crazy.
No.
I guess
that was it. Cause
no, it was 50 Shades. Yeah.
I don't know.
A Million Little Pieces is what
it's called.
Oh, she
did the movie version of that. Yeah, that was the book that was like fake. He said, do you remember this? It was like Oprah had it in her book club.
Yes.
It was like, it's a real book. And afterwards, the guy came out and was like, I lied.
He's like, I got you.
He's like, yeah, you get a card.
You get a card. It's like, yeah, that wasn't real.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That's crazy. And then they made a movie out of it. There you go.
If that doesn't show you what it takes to be famous in America, I don't know what does.
Hey, man.
Anyways, Jeremy, where can the good people follow you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter as a spoonerism of my name. I'm Jeremy Nunez, so you'd find it as Naremy Juniors.
Yes, perfect. And you can, of course, follow me with everything going on at Movie Nerd Reviews across all platforms, at Official Talking TV Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to us if you're watching us on YouTube. This episode will be available tomorrow on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other music listening platforms, if you will. Be sure to keep tuning in for new episodes of our summer season every week, every Sunday. like I said, it's going to be an interesting summer, and we're going to be keeping track of it as well, box office wise as well. Yeesh, already not looking good. Jeremy, thank you once again for coming on, and as
thank
always, people,
you for having me.
Of course, hopefully we'll actually have you on many more episodes. Even though
I'm never coming back.
Never coming back. We'll see. More like never going back.
Never going back. Jack Reacher, never go back.
They're never going back. I was thinking of the A24 movie as well.
Same thing.
Yeah, all right. 12 seasons of short film. We'll see you guys next week for the Talking TV podcast. Peace.